The Week in Art is sponsored by Christie's. Visit christies.com to find out more about the world's leading auction house since 1766. Auction, private sales, online, art, anytime. Hello, I'm Ben Luke and welcome back to The Week in Art. I hope you've had a good summer break. This week, in the first episode of this new series, Afghanistan, we hear from an anthropologist and an Afghan artist about Afghanistan's people, art and heritage as the Taliban assume power again. As well as talking to the anthropologist Melissa Chiavenda and the artist Yama Rahimi about Afghanistan, we hear about a work being made in Notre Dame in Paris by the sound artist Bill Fontana, helping the cathedral to regain its voice after the catastrophic fire in 2019. Now, the US sound artist Bill Fontana is currently working on a project to record the sounds that the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris hears through its 10 monumental bells. Fontana plans to livestream the audio at the Institut de Recherche et Coordination Acoustique Musique, or IRCAM, in Paris next year, and possibly at museums and cultural sites around the world in the future. Our editor in the Americas, Helen Stoilus, broke the news of Fontana's project in the print edition of the art newspaper, which is just out, and she spoke to Fontana about this intriguing project. But first, here's a brief excerpt of Fontana's audio recording of Emmanuel, Notre Dame's oldest and largest bell, resonating with the sounds of Paris.
So let's start off with you tell me a little bit about how you started first thinking about this project. You've created kind of similar pieces based on bells in Buddhist temples in Kyoto and the MetLife Tower in New York.
Right. And then because I'd done a lot of work in London, and when I discovered that the Elizabeth Tower of Big Ben was going to be closed for renovations, I had the idea of doing a sound piece with the 4 o'clock bells as a live streaming sort of sound piece about the silence of Big Ben. And I'd gone so far as to really discuss it with like the BBC Radio 3, who were very interested in it. But I couldn't really get anywhere with the bureaucracy of the Palace of Westminster to get permission to really do a sound piece like that. And I was talking to a friend of mine in Paris, and I was telling her about this idea with Big Ben, and she said, forget about Big Ben. The most interesting silent bells in the world are right here in Paris, the 10 bells of Notre Dame. And then I started researching this and realized that the bell towers essentially were not damaged in the fire. There's some lead contamination dust in the bell towers, but the physical structure of the bell towers kind of remained intact. And the 10 bells are there, hanging, waiting to be rung. And so I decided to kind of focus my energy on trying to do this. But doing this during the pandemic without having physical access to people and Notre Dame itself was very challenging from San Francisco. So for the last year and a half, this project and the idea for this project kind of became my dream and became like a form of self-therapy in a way, because I felt it was really good for me to have an incredible dream and vision of something to kind of put my energy into. And I realized it was really kind of risky to put all my energy into trying to do this because there was no certainty at all that this could happen.
Like, how weren't they damaged? What were they protected by the bell tower, or they were just out of the way?
I think that the only damage that occurred in the bell towers was really smoke and ash lead contamination. I mean, to access the bell towers, you know, I had to take a lead contamination training class wearing this, this special protective suit. The other thing that was amazing, just as a visual experience, being on the bell tower and on the balconies and terraces of the bell towers, I had close-up views to all these remarkable gargoyles.
Oh, that's a fun treat.
Oh, that was so interesting to get close to these gargoyles and photograph them.
Yeah, it must have been daunting, especially for a site like Notre Dame that is such a symbol for a country,
right,
and for the heritage community, and to have seen the destruction that happened to it from the fire and the rebuilding efforts and how much people have come together. It must have been a very difficult thought to even broach it from that perspective.
I think my journey in trying to do this in Paris actually began with the media curator at SF MoMA, who I've worked with a lot, and I asked him, do you know any interesting media curators in Paris that I can approach? And he was very kind and introduced me to two media curators at the Centre Pompidou, Marcello Lista and Philippe Bettinelli. And they were very interested in the idea, but they were also kind of daunted by how to do something like this. Because, I mean, the first issue is, how do you gain access?
Yeah, I was going to ask, what was that process like?
They were very, very interested and open. There was a guy in a former French cultural attaché who's based in Brazil who got interested in the project. So through the Centre Pompidou people, this guy in Brazil, they connected me to a couple of people in the Ministry of Culture who were very helpful. They did email introductions to me to the then Secretary General of the Restoration, Anne Minnie Horn, and that introduction over a period of time eventually led me to be able to actually have a meeting a month ago. But a real turning point in that process, which really got people to take this seriously, is that the most important cultural institution in France for sound art and contemporary music is IRCOM. And they completely got behind the idea. But also at the same time, there was this group of researchers with an ongoing research project about the acoustic history of Notre Dame. And so because of that and the combination of those scientists and IRCOM, I eventually got taken seriously with wanting to do this. And there also started to be some international interest in the project, because the idea is this would be a live streaming work of media art. The idea is very simple. I want to install a network of sensors on each of Notre Dame's 10 bells and to create a live streaming work of art out of that. That would go to IRCOM initially and then eventually have the ability to travel anywhere in the world as a live streaming work of art. So there have been ongoing discussions with different institutions about this.
Was it difficult getting permission to kind of go physically into the site, you know?
Yes, hugely difficult. It took a year and a half.
And I'm sure a year and a half and kind of contacting the upper echelons of, you know, the heritage world in Paris and everywhere.
Yeah, but it was a game of chess. There were many days where there was a voice inside of me that said, Bill, you're crazy. You have no idea. You're putting all this energy into this, and you have no idea that you're going to do this. And it just gave me something to dream about during the pandemic, because I couldn't travel anywhere. And it was really kind of good for my soul, in a way, to have this vision that I could think about. And then, you know, when I was back there finally in July, actually, you know, having the meeting and then actually accessing the Notre Dame worksite, I had a hard time distinguishing reality from fantasy, because for so long this had been a fantasy and a dream. And then to actually be there physically in the presence of these bells.
Under the Emmanuel bell, I saw a photo of you. The bell's bigger than you are. I mean, you just kind of get
lost. A lot bigger. It's a lot bigger than me.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Goliath that you're standing underneath.
Right, I was sitting on a bench inside the bell under it, you know. So, you know, but then there's the nine other bells, and there's issues about how you install a network and wire a network in this medieval bell tower. It's all these kind of practical.
Were the Notre Dame people at all nervous about you kind of installing equipment on the bells, or you said the bells were in decent condition? So it.
I think the bells are in decent condition. I think there's just a lot of sort of practical technical issues to kind of solve. And the purpose of the trip I'm making in September is really to kind of sort this all out. I've got great people on the ground now in Paris. You know, I've hired a project manager who comes out of somebody I'd worked with years ago at the Tate Modern when I did this Millennium Bridge piece. He worked for an engineering company called Arup. And so he's somebody who really understood what I was doing. And speaking of Arup, one of the amazing people in Paris that I'm working with is a sound engineer, who's a professor at the Sorbonne, named Brian Katz, who came out of Arup. And one of the things he's been doing as part of his official kind of research is to create a virtual acoustic model of the acoustics of Notre Dame as it had been before the fire. And what I'm hoping to do, you know, in the month of September is to actually, maybe by the end of September or in October, actually install the whole sensor network on the bells. and get that going live, partly to actually have a chance to access the sounds and have a chance to work with them live. When it's sent to EARCOM, it's also possible I'll be able to access it in my studio. And also having the real sound of 10 bells is really useful for me as I speak to other museums and institutions.
So once you set up the sensors and that's streaming live, it'll be going to EARCOM, the stream, but you'd also be, and it'll just continue even if you leave Paris. Those will remain on the bells?
My hope is that I can install this on the bells and have it streaming live so I can record and document the 10 bells and have long, long recordings, which I can make from my studio as well as from EARCOM, but also to be able to work with the material so I really understand the most interesting way to make a piece.
How long do you think the sensors would remain on the bells?
That's a question I can't answer today, but my dream or my ambition would be that if we can install the sensors on the bells successfully, I would like to keep them in place until the restoration of Notre Dame is finished in 2024 or 2025, which means that besides going live to EARCOM in June, it's possible subsequently that it could travel to another institution in Paris. It could travel to a museum anywhere in the world.
Like you could have it streaming at the Metropolitan, you could have it streaming at Tate.
Any museum that's really open and interested
in
doing this. And the other idea I'm thinking about, and this is, you know, on my wish list of things, I would like to, once I hear the sound of these 10 bells and work with that, I'm thinking it would be also interesting to make outdoor versions of it. So I could place this, the streaming sound of these resonating bells in a plaza. One of my fantasies is if I've got this network in place by next spring, the 15th of April is the third anniversary of the fire.
Right.
And I'd love to be able for a day to place this sound piece in the plaza in front of Notre Dame.
Oh, wow, yeah. Notre Dame gets its voice back, you know, kind of after the fire.
But I don't know if they're going to let me do this. I don't
But you've been working closely with the restoration teams, it sounds like, and with the Friends of Notre Dame and the organizations that are overseeing the restoration, and they've been on board with this? They've been kind of like supportive of...
So far, so good.
I'm sure it would be a good way as well to get attention to the project, because we've seen that they need more funding for the restoration. That's going to be a much bigger...
Well, also, you know, I've had discussions with this official foundation called the Friends of Notre Dame de Paris, that is raising money. And I'm hoping that if my project is successful, gets out in the world, travels to these places, that it could help raise money for the restoration.
And you said you did some audio studies on the bell tower this summer, and that involved putting accelerometers, but just on Emmanuel, right?
Just on Emmanuel, because it was the only bell at the time that I could actually physically access, because to access the other bells, which were higher up, I would have needed some more specialized climbing equipment.
Oh, and gosh.
Things like that. But Emmanuel was the bell that was, you know, kind of reasonably possible for me to access. And so I thought it was just a great place to start.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you're going to go for one, go for the biggest and the oldest.
Biggest and the oldest, and it's a symbolic bell.
Yeah.
And it just completely overwhelmed me to realize that I was hearing a sound of this bell that nobody had ever heard before.
What did you learn about your kind of like first studies about the bells? You kind of talked about it briefly when we first started talking about this. And also, what do you think once you get the other sensors on the other bells, what do you think you might pick up from this chorus of bells in the bell tower?
Those 10 bells, the other nine are smaller and younger than Emmanuel. And I'm imagining that it's going to be like this shimmering harmonic curtain. You know, each of these bells has its own harmonics and resonances. And so when you hear them together reacting basically to the same ambient sound of Paris and the building of Notre Dame, I imagine, and my intuitions tell me, that it's going to be this beautiful kind of harmonic curtain of these resonating vibrations. And so my goal in September is to kind of really flesh this out and really know the details of this.
When do you think the first public presentation will be of any sound piece from this?
Well, I think right now the idea is that it would have its world premiere in Paris at IRCON in June of next year. And after that, I'm hoping by then it'll be possible to schedule some future, exhibitions of this work. The other thing is, if they'll let me do it, is on the 15th of April, if I could do a one day, put the sound curtain on the plaza in front of Notre Dame, I'd really like to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure Paris would like to hear that as well. The Parisians, having seen the work go on in Notre Dame, having something like those bells play, you know?
Well, to me, the idea that you have these bells that are actually secretly ringing all the time, that nobody can hear, and that it's a physical fact that these bells are actually vibrating all the time, it's like a spirit that's living inside of Notre Dame. It's not dead. It's alive, and I think it just is, to me, a very emotional, symbolic sort of use of sound.
This has been a pleasure as always, Bill. Always fun talking to you.
For more on Bill Fontana, visit his website at resoundings.org. And that's all for this episode. You can subscribe to The Art Newspaper at theartnewspaper.com. Click on the subscribe link at the top left of the page and you'll find a range of subscriptions. And do subscribe to this podcast and our sister podcast, A Brush With, featuring in-depth interviews with leading artists, if you haven't already done so. And please give us a rating or review if you've enjoyed it. We're on Twitter at Tan Audio and on Facebook and Instagram, of course. The Week in Art is produced by Julia Mahalska, Amy Dawson and David Clack. And David also does the editing and sound design. Thanks also to Henrietta Bentle and Daniela Hathaway, and to this week's guests, Melissa, Yama, Helen, and Bill. And thank you for listening. See you next week. Bye for now. The Week in Art is sponsored by Christie's. Visit Christie's.com to find out more about the world's leading auction house since 1766. Auction, private sales, online, art, anytime.